Hello and welcome to High Low, a Kershaw podcast. I'm your host Spencer, and with me is Joel.
Yeah, there's nothing to intro, crazy intro to this thing because it's a special episode.
Yes. This is a special episode on Mr. Toshiro Mifune, and it's a little different from the other special episodes because if you've been listening to the podcast already, you've heard us sporadically kind of bring up various things about Toshiro's life and his career. I go over some very light biographical stuff because there's a little documentary out there called The Last Samurai, Toshiro The Last Samurai. It should just still be on Netflix. And that does a much better job, and it is worth watching. And, so I'll skip the boring stuff out first. He was born April 1st, 1920, in China. I won't try to pronounce the place, because I'm not really sure how to say it. And he never came to Japan. He had never been to Japan until he was about 19 or 20, and then he got drafted to World War II. And, so I don't think he saw combat. He was like a trainer, not trainer. He did something with like working with young soldiers. I don't think he was an officer, but he may have been like something like that. The documentary covers it much better. I'm trying to skip over. There are better sources than me for this. His first film ever was the Kinoshita film, The Snow Trail.
Right.
Yeah, that's for 1947. Then following that, he did Drunken Angel with Kurosawa. That was supposed to be like the big starring role for your father, but then Toshiro kind of took over the show when it was like, oh, this guy is something special.
Well, it's interesting that they're both his first and second movie both had Takahashi in it. Because, like, in Snow Trail, which you haven't seen, right?
No.
Yeah, I watched it just a while ago, just on a whim. And Takahashi is the main... like, they're both playing bad guys. Takahashi's the main bad guy, but the camera just loves... Oh, no, it isn't.
No.
Takashi Shimura?
Yeah, Takashi.
Yeah, I didn't mean to say Takahashi. Anyways, I don't remember anybody's names. Not okay. Even Toshiro Mifune's name.
Okay. But they play bad guys then, Snow Trail?
Yeah, they play bad guys, and like I said, I want to say it again, Takashi Shimura is the main baddie, and it's kind of his movie, but the camera just loves Toshiro. It can't get enough of that pretty face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What studio? I can't remember what studio it was, but he was going in to get a job on film crew to be like a cameraman or camera assistant, something like that. And then they are kind of were so blown away just by his presence. You know, like maybe you want like, hey, do you want to like audition or something?
It was a different one than Toho. Snow Trail is also Toho.
That's Toho. Okay, it's Kinoshita, so I wasn't sure which studio.
No, it's Senkichi Taniguchi. Is the director of Snow Trail.
Oh.
See, we don't have any other information correct.
Yeah. For some reason I had in my head it was Kinoshita. I don't know why I thought that.
Because you're drunk.
Yeah. Anyway, so... after Drunken Angel, he worked with Kurosawa 15 more times. And he kind of became a huge international superstar with I guess Seven Samurai would be the thing that really pushed him over to be like international superstar, because yeah. Rickshaw Man kind of in Japan made people realize he was a legitimate actor, and they took more seriously after Rickshaw Man in Japan. But if you're talking like US and Europe, then Seven Samurai was kind of the big thing. And yeah, he had a kind of sporadic Hollywood career, because he kind of worked constantly until the early 90s when He had dementia and couldn't really remember his lines. But he was, and the only ones I think of offhand are Grand Prix by John Frankenheimer.
Yeah.
I always think I'm saying his name wrong for some reason.
No, you got it.
He did that. He was in a Mexican Western playing a Mexican character at one point.
Toshiro Mifune was playing a Mexican character.
He was in some Mexican films, and I believe at least one he played a Mexican.
I mean, considering my father has been asked if he was Japanese on occasion, it's not that. Not that far-fetched.
Well,
He is complete. My father's completely Mexican, but
your father in real life.
yes,
Okay.
not Takeda, not yeah, that guy
Not
Shimura.
yes. And he did that. He was in the gravely overlooked 1941 by
Oh,
Spielberg.
overlooked by who?
By America.
By critics everywhere.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I'm sure it's not as bad as people say it is.
Well, there's an excellent Flophouse episode with John Hodgman that covers it if you don't dare to take the plunge.
Yeah, that's a good episode. I think Hodgman saw it in theaters with his parents too.
Yeah, that's what he was saying, yeah.
There's this one called Winter Kills. That's this kind of weird thriller. The projection booth just did an episode on Winter Kills, so I printed it on Amazon, but have not watched it yet. He plays a character named Keith.
Keith, yeah, he looks like a Keith. No, he doesn't.
And Anthony Perkins is in that movie, and it's a whole list, like a whole bunch of big stars in that one. And so in 1950, around Rashomon time, he married his wife, Sachiko Yoshimina, Mine, and they had two children together, but he kind of cheated and slept around. And
Scandal.
yes, and he they end up separating in the mid-70s because she got tired of him sleeping around, but she did not want a divorce. They separated, and she died in 1995. And but they had been separated for 20 years by that point, and Toshiro had a mistress. I guess it's a mistress. Would that count if you're not even living together?
Yeah, I mean it's still a mistress.
Yeah, okay. And they had a daughter. The
So
daughter was
he had
born,
three children?
yeah, two sons with his wife, one with his mistress. And the daughter was born early 80s, might be like 81, so much she might be like your age.
Man, do I know this person?
Don't know. But she's the one who revealed that George Lucas approached Toshiro for Star Wars a
To be
couple times.
Obi-Wan.
And then to be Darth Vader, allegedly. And even then, he's like, nah, I'm not interested. And I think he offered him like a third time for a third for the Emperor, I think.
For Yoda.
And for the Emperor, he's like, yeah, I'm just not interested in this Star Wars thing.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, that would have been. I even know how it turned out if he picked one of the three.
Would have been interesting.
Yeah. And towards the end of his career, his mentally he started to go. He developed dementia, and his son kind of became his manager. And his son kind of pretty much took care of him for the last few years of his life. And he passed away at the age of 77 in 1997 on Christmas Eve. And Kurosawa wanted to attend the funeral, but his health was so poor by that point, it would have been just too much of a hassle for him to be transported to the funeral.
When did Kurosawa die?
I believe the next year, 98.
Oh man, he couldn't live without him.
No. And Mifune was a decade younger than him. Mifune was a decade younger than Kurosawa. And, well, this is supposed to be a teaser for another special episode coming up, but, Satsuko Hara was also born in 1920. She's only a couple months younger than Toshiro.
When did she pass?
2015?
Oh, okay.
Well, she didn't...
She had already faded into obscurity, or she had stopped doing movies a long time before that, right?
Yeah, the year Ozu died, she retired.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Toshiro kind of was... He liked to drink, and in the documentary, his son talks about he would frequently get drunk and start playing with actual katanas he had around the house. And nice. He tried to show his sons like how to use a katana and stuff. And his son said growing up around that was always terrifying.
Yeah, I would think so.
And he would also drive drunk to Kurosawa's house and just want to hang out. And Kurosawa would sometimes let happen, sometimes be like, I have stuff to do. I'll see you another time.
Toshiro, you're drunk. Go home.
Yeah. I'm not a doctor, but I think maybe the drinking may have contributed to his poor health later on.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah. And, so he's kind of a cinematic legend. I wrote some basic notes, and I was trying to think of, who's the easiest comparison to Toshiro in, the U.S. in, Hollywood. I can't really think of anyone who... I thought John Wayne, but John Wayne wasn't... Well, I haven't seen any John Wayne. Have you seen any John Wayne movies? Could he be, restrained and, more sensitive and light?
Yeah, I mean, he could be, but he doesn't, I feel like John Wayne's as good as a comparison as you could do, because I think when you think samurai, you think Toshiro Mifune, and so it's like this representation, and of course he did tons of those kinds of movies, but he also had a range of different things that he did, and John Wayne did a bunch of things, although... they're not character actors. They're famous for being them, kind of thing.
George Clooney.
Right, exactly. You don't hire, George Clooney at least tries sometimes to be something different, but he's not.
Yeah, well, Cary Grant is a better example.
Yeah, Cary Grant, Jack Nicholson. That's a guy who only plays himself, usually.
Spencer Tracy later on, because kind of was like, oh, it's Spencer Tracy doing his Spencer Tracy persona again.
Yeah, Spencer Seams.
Which I'm not saying Spencer Tracy was a bad actor. It worked for a reason.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Dick Tracy.
And Mumbles?
Mumbles, Prunface.
Yep.
88 Keys. So what do you want to talk about now that we're done with his history, his extensive history? 77 years of life brought down to 5 minutes of conversation. No.
Yes. I'm no expert, but to list before we get... Well, we have two non-Kurosawa movies he was in that we'll talk about in a little bit. But I want to go through what your favorite Toshiro characters are. And your favorite moments in his films. And I have a third one, which is my two favorite intros of Toshiro in a film.
Sure. So we've covered 14 movies with Toshiro Mifune on the podcast. And let's see, I think all of those are individual episodes and not part of collaborations.
Yes.
Yeah. Mostly, like, staring this down, we get, when it comes to period pieces, Seven Samurai, Rashomon, Yojimbo, Sanjuro, Redbeard.
Hidden Fortress.
I just looked at that and I skipped right over
it. Lower Depths? Would that count?
Rickshaw Man, Lower Depths. Yep. And, yeah, that about covers it. And then the contemporary ones, High and Low, Bad Sleep Well, I Live in Fear, Quiet Duel, and Wedding Ring.
And Scandal.
Oh, Scandal. Once again, I looked at the cover and I went, nope, not going to mention that one. So it's these different ranges here. It's Toshiro with a ponytail, Toshiro without a ponytail.
Yeah, Toshiro with man bun, Toshiro, American style hair.
Yeah. You notice he never does the bald on top with the ponytail on the back thing that you see typically in those kind of period piece movies. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I was trying to think. I always assumed he did in my mind, but I don't think he ever did.
I feel like it's a studio note. Like somebody was like, never touch that hair. It always has to be up there on top and full or something like that.
Or maybe it's a personal choice that you're like, no, you don't touch this.
It could be, but you see plenty of bald caps in those movies, so
yeah.
I mean, they didn't even bother to do that.
I mean, your father was always willing to shave his head.
Yep, he didn't. I mean, I think his hair was missing anyway, so.
Yeah, probably.
Like you see him in Sagata.
Yeah.
He's got hair on that thing. Yeah. Godzilla, he's got a full head of white hair.
And then Seven Samurai, he shaves his head.
Yep. Oh, yeah, we see him shave his head in that movie.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that actor. No, I'm just kidding. I'll pick some favorite characters here.
Yeah.
I absolutely, obviously, Yojimbo is one of his most famous roles. Like, that's a Toshiro Mifune movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that character, even when he gets transferred over to Sanjuro, which I don't... I like Yojimbo better than Sanjuro, which I believe you're the opposite of, right?
Yeah, like, Yojimbo is objectively the better movie, but Sanjuro, I kind of have more of an attachment to.
Right, you love underdogs. I get it.
It's the goofy, funny one.
And, of course, Zatoichi versus Yojimbo, which I haven't seen.
No, I've seen Zatoichi in the Fire Festival. That's
no.
Never mind.
I've seen like 5 Zatoichi movies, and I can't tell you, other than Zatoichi being super fast with the sword, I can't tell you the plots of any of them.
Fire Festival has I think Peter in it, who was I guess drag queen would be easy way to explain it. He would play like women parts or hyper feminine men, and he lived his life the term in Japan, the term is a gay boy, which means you a man who lives his life in drag. It is a Tokyo 60s thing. If you watch certain movies, you'll know that term.
Sure. But like
Peter in Fire Festival, I think, plays a hyper-feminine man. One of the few times he played a man. And the whole joke is he wants to sleep with Zatoichi, and Zatoichi, I think, doesn't realize it. But it's not very funny. It gets old fast.
Somebody wants to sleep with Zatoichi in every one of his movies, as far as I can remember. For some reason, he's just catnip. Catnip to the ladies.
And Peter.
Mm-hmm. And Peter. Catnip to ladies, men, Nakadai, you name it, they want him.
Mm-hmm.
So Yojimbo, his character of this, like, this stinky, itchy, not very smart-looking samurai who just wanders into town and is like, hey, you know what? I'm in this business now because I think I'm going to make some money. He's lying to one side, he's lying to the other side. He's getting himself into life-threatening situations and just kind of throwing caution to the wind. It's almost like he's got this suicidal mentality where he doesn't care if he's going to die or not. He'll take the risk if it's going to get him some gold. And, you know, he shows that he does actually, I like in Yojimbo where it seems like he's a scoundrel, and at the end he does actually have a heart. In Sanjiro, I feel like right away he's a good guy.
Oh, yeah, in Sanjiro, he kind of feels sorry because those samurai are stupid.
Yeah, those are the five whatever stooges.
Yeah, and he's like, well, they're lying to you and you're just going to get killed. And he kind of just takes pity on them and reluctantly decides to be like, fine, I'll help you. Just don't be stupid.
I'll be nanny to you Muppet babies. Yeah. Take care of people by slicing them up.
But also, like, Sanjuro shows that the character has grown up. To an extent. True.
Yeah, and that's one of the other movies we're going to talk about. You see his character transitioning that way, like growing up. Although, we'll get into that. I have a problem with Samurai 1 because of that.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to say?
Sanjuro, the character, is my top one. For all reasons, you said he's just this kind of charismatic scoundrel who will get into trouble. And it's like this, and then I don't know. He's just, you don't land up better than me,
I guess.
Yeah,
that doesn't happen.
Yeah, and I just like that in the film Sanjuro. It's a sequel purely in the sense of he's a changed person, where in Yojimbo he was a lot meaner and was like kind of kill indiscriminately just for the fun of it. And then Sanjuro, he's very reluctant to use violence, period.
Right. So is there a character you want to name now?
The character from High and Low, who was Kingo Gondo?
The shoemaker?
Yes. Because the character from the is not a good person from the start, and yet you kind of end up feeling sympathy for him because he kind of has to, because he realizes through his social class he kind of has to, not social class necessarily, but through just a situation he kind of has to do the right thing. Because if he doesn't, then he looks like an asshole. But if he doesn't, I forgot what I said there.
He has to do the right thing.
Yeah, he's kind of forced into doing the right thing, and so he's forced to get over himself, and he's forced to just learn to be a better person.
Yeah, He is not, I don't even feel like that's the case. Like, his character in High and Low is almost forced to do the right thing and does not change his character because of that. The only thing that changes is that the company that already wants to get rid of him because he is making their costs go through the roof because he demands a higher quality product. Like, they change their mind about it because he starts to get public opinion on his side. But yes. I don't think he doesn't even choose to do things strategically to get the public opinion on his side. He eventually gets convinced that, like, if he doesn't do it, it's going to look real terrible, and he's already lost his job anyway, so what has he got to lose? He might as well pay off this, you know, ransom or whatever, and lose his job, becomes a lawnmower.
Yeah.
The Lawnmower Man! Starring Toshiro Mifune.
Yeah, I just like I see your point, but I think through him, through circumstances, it forces him to reevaluate the type of person he is and his lifestyle and everything he thought of, like everything he thought of himself to that point.
Yeah, I mean, that was a, for his character, that was a nosedive. He was at the top of his game. He was ready to buy out the company, basically.
Yeah.
Get everybody off the board who was trying to make his product worse than it was. And it just, at the drop of a hat, all of a sudden, everything is ruined.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy story that way. But and I really like High and Low in general.
Yeah, it's kind of a masterpiece. Well, yes. A lot of our masterpieces.
Yeah, absolutely. So if I had to pick another one, I'd have to say his general character in Hidden Fortress,
mm-hmm.
which is another masterpiece in my opinion.
General Roku Rada, I think mm-hmm. was it?
Him going from a too smart, you know. I mean, he's a super smart guy the whole time, but when he starts showing off like the reason why he's a general, the reason why he is responsible for the princess's safety, like just those amazing that amazing fight scene he has with the guy who played
Susumu Fujita,
yes, the Judo Saga,
yeah.
Is it Sanshiro Sugata? Is that what it is?
Yeah, Sanshiro Sugata.
Sanshiro Sugata. Yes. Yeah, it doesn't show up on the list I'm looking at because it's only Mifune movies. But he is magnanimous in this movie. He is like what you would expect a warrior king to do. You know, he's Black Panther.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Exactly. Yeah. And there are other times where we've seen him, where he's had to play a royal figure or a highborn something or other and stuff like that. And it's not the same thing. This man is has been down there fighting and knows how to keep people safe and is not afraid to speak his mind while also protecting those people who he needs to protect. He can tell when somebody's lying to him. And he is brave to a fault, like to endangering his life fault, you know.
Yeah.
His character is amazing in that movie. And the movie is full of amazing characters. It's not just him.
Yeah, it's the rare, I think it's like the one time there's a truly strong, independent female character in a Kurosawa film.
Well, there's a little movie called The Most Beautiful. And I think you'll see that there. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, my last one, well, there's a honorable mention, but before that is his character from Drunken Angel. I forgot to look up the character's name. But
what's
he's,
that?
Drunken Angel was his debut with Kurosawa, where he plays a, well, there's debate over whether or not Drunken Angel is a Yakuza movie. I think it barely fits, fits the criteria if I do consider a Yakuza movie, because he plays this Yakuza guy, Matsunaga, who is dying of tuberculosis. I think it was tuberculosis. Yeah. And he kind of, so he goes to a doctor played by your father, who is this drunken doctor who's like the only person in the only doctor in the region, but no one really likes him because he's drunk and has a temper. And through circumstances, the doctor and Toshiro become friends, and he's in the, because the doctor's like, well, I'm just tired of seeing these young men like you waste their lives. And so he goes from being a Yakuza, like, up-and-coming boss to kind of trying to change his life, and I won't go into much more detail on that. But
we haven't done it yet for the podcast.
That is true. And it's also one of my favorite movies of all time. And it's just this great performance where, like, this was his second movie. Like, it's still, like, it's not his best performance by any stretch, but it's you watch this performance and you're like, this guy will end up being something special.
Weren't you saying that there was some critic, or somebody was saying there was some critic that was like, they were surprised they could get such a performance out of such a bad actor?
Kessler said it was Imamura, said he loved Kurosawa when he realized he could get a great performance out of a terrible actor like Toshiro.
and Toshiro's not faultless, but he's been in a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, and if you want to ever see him dance to like big band jazz music, this is your chance.
No.
No?
No, we're not going to watch that movie now for the podcast, I've decided.
Okay.
The last person I want to mention is Redbeard, which is one of our more recent episodes. And it's his last Kurosawa movie.
Yes.
And it's epic in scope. It's epic in production, right? It took like 3 years or 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah. And his character is like understated, very wise, and it's just very different than a lot of the other things that I've seen. Like, mostly he plays he, every character basically has a brashness to them that
Yeah.
Redbeard does not have. He has the look of a man who has the weight of the world on his shoulders, but he's also got this Buddhist wisdom about the situations. He doesn't let things, he can just keeps working. He doesn't let things actually weigh him down.
It's the role that your father would usually play.
Exactly. And my father would have played it too if it wasn't for those damn kids and their dog.
I don't think he could do that badass judo scene, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, maybe, but it wouldn't be believable
I
to
mean,
see him.
he was doing judo in Sanshiro Sagata,
Yeah, that is true.
but mostly being flipped over.
Yeah, and he was a young 45-year-old man at the time.
Yeah, exactly. He was a baby. Sanshiro Baby Sagata.
Yeah.
Anyways, I just think that his performance as Redbeard is spectacular.
it's has the two extremes of him being like this gruff, brash, like hyper masculine man, and him being very quiet and sensitive and I guess like attentive and selfless.
And wise.
Yeah. And my last one is his character from Scandal, the artist formerly known as Prince. No, I should have made better notes.
You mean
Whatever.
what the artist's name was?
Yes.
Ichiro Aoyi, Aoyi.
Yeah, that. But his character but in Scandal, he's just like this purely good-natured person who with kind of seemingly no real flaws, really. Like, it's like part of the problem with the movie is his character is just ultimately too good, but like that what kind of what I like about the character is just so extremely good. And like the big climax is him, they lose the court, they initially lose the court, just the court case, and then he just kind of goes a speech of like, but we're still good people. And it's just so, like, if it wasn't Toshiro, I would be like, I don't buy it for a second. Like, if it was Susumu Fujita, it wouldn't work. But for some reason, like, Toshiro can just like pull out this, like, this really empathetic performance from this movie that ultimately kind of isn't all that great compared to everything like around it.
Right, I mean, it's not a masterpiece, but it is a very good movie with two, at least two great performances. I see my father was in it, and I don't remember what his role was.
He was the
Takashi
lawyer.
Shiura. Oh yes, with the glasses, right?
Yeah, he looked kind of pudgy.
Yeah, and like, are you gonna replace this lawyer? Because he's incompetent. Like, that's right. Yeah, he's great too. Okay, so there's 17 good performances in it, but
Yeah,
this is, I mean, this is essentially a comedy, right? It's a comedy drama.
it's his, it's Kurosawa's take on Lauren and Ryan said Frank Ca Frank Capra.
For sure, yeah. The paparazzi tabloids all trying to get any stories out of these famous people. There's an artist with a... what is she a model or is she just...
She's a model.
Yeah. And they're, you know, they get caught at the wrong time. We're both wearing their bathrobes, you know, as they're...
Oh, no, she's a whatever. Singer.
Something like that.
He worked with a model who just had a baby, and she was self-conscious about her body, and he was like, no, your body's still fine, even though you had a baby. And she's like...
No, your body's stellar. What?
Yeah, but, like, it's not even, like, pervy. It's just him being... super nice and genuine.
Yeah, he's a nice guy, and he's an artist, so he like looks at forms all the time. Yeah, that's the ticket.
And he rides a motorcycle everywhere.
Of course he does. And he scratches his head like he has lice.
Yeah.
So I assume he's Yojimbo reborn as a artist.
Yeah. So do you have your favorite moments?
Well, when you asked about favorite moments, the very first thing that occurred to me was in the movie The Rickshaw Man.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing he's like a poor person in that movie.
Yeah.
Hanging out with a family that's not his.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really remember what the main through line of the story is, but there is this part where they go and they see a parade. And he's talking about, oh, in history, blah, 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 you know, this is supposed to represent this event, mm-hmm. and everything like that. And there are people out there playing the taikos, you know, the giant drums there. And he's like, well, back in the day, they really knew how to hit the drums. And he's like, you know what, I'm going to run up there and show you. So he runs up and he like asks the guy, can I play the drums? He's like, sure, I'll take, you know, you take a turn. And then he shows the four, he presents them as four different ways for different occasions that those drums would have been played. And as he gets progressively more aggressive with the drums, he kind of disrobes as he's going. And they flash to a place, I think it's like a palace or something like that, or at least somebody who is richer living. And that person's like, ah, yes, that's the way they used to play the drums. I remember it well, you know. It's just a really fun scene in a movie that, spoiler alert, is actually pretty sad at the end.
Yeah. My first one is the fight scene in Redbeard where he is, through judo, just takes on, like, 15 guys and breaks her arms and legs.
I got carried away.
Yeah, and like and he flips the guy over, and like the bone is sticking through his arm, and he's like, oh, I went too far on this guy. Mm-hmm. And then immediately he feels guilty and like, I need to patch these guys up.
It's one of those I've got great power but I never have to use it kind of thing.
Yeah,
I never want to use it, but if I have to, it's right there.
And I think, like in Yojimbo, his character would have never even considered the feelings of someone else. And in Sanjuro, he would have this fought them, but he won't do anything else after that besides feel guilty. And this just shows the evolution of that type of character of like, no, I should help these people that I just hurt.
Yeah, I mean, he takes his position as a physician incredibly seriously, you know, do no harm to that point. At this point, he was protecting somebody, right? From a bunch of gangsters.
Yeah,
He tries his best to take them out peacefully, but he gets carried away, exactly.
Yeah. What's your next one?
Oh, that's you're getting a little difficult here. Now, okay. Because, like, if I had to pick the entirety of the movie Yojimbo, I'd pick the entirety of the movie Yojimbo. But I guess if I had to narrow down to the parts are very much are to a single moment, it's actually not a fight scene in Yojimbo I pick. I think I pick the part after he's gotten the crap beaten out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's crawling around underneath those places where people are looking, trying to find him after this, doing his escape thing. And then he gets back into that shopkeeper and he's like, you need to get one of those casket basket things, you know, carry me around. Like, when he's down, you know, after being so thoroughly plummeted, pummeled is what I meant to say, that I just really dig that scene, because he's been like the master of everything, you know, always at the top of his game, two steps ahead of his enemy every time, and then finally, whoops! Somebody catches him, and he pays for it. But he still does slip out of their hands.
Yeah. And for me, the next one, just like the first one, is a fight scene. It's the epic duel from Hidden Fortress.
That is a magnificent scene.
Yeah.
I can't emphasize enough how good Hidden Fortress is altogether. That is one of the best fight scenes I've ever seen on film.
When we did that episode, we tried to think of like other great, huge fight scenes like that, but that's kind of like the only one of that caliber. Like I really can't think of any. It's any CIMAC fight scene that's as great as it is. Like I don't know how to describe it besides it's just this insanely perfect, perfectly choreographed, perfectly shot, like perfectly arranged fight scene that goes on for what feels like 20 minutes, but like that's a good thing in this case, where like you don't want it to end.
Yeah, it's like 20 minutes of sitting on the edge of your seat waiting for one person to get advantage over the other, and it does eventually get to a point where one beats the other, but these guys are very, you know, it's Toshiro and what is that actor's name? You said it before.
Susumu Fujita.
Susumu Fujita, that's right.
Yes.
And they're playing generals, but one of them is a fallen general who's trying to escape. The other is the one in charge of the entire army. And rather than allowing some of his, you know, minions to hold or just keep Toshiro Mifune locked up or whatever, they duel it out. And it's an amazing duel. You know, swinging at each other, weapons breaking. It like a bunch of Toshiro Mifune's fight scenes are usually him being so fast with a sword that his enemies just fall before him. And that's not the case. These are, like I said, two evenly matched, both taking the fight incredibly seriously, and both, you know, battle-worn warriors.
Yeah. And, like, they're old rivals who end up becoming friends by the end.
Yeah, they make out at the end. It's weird.
Yeah.
But not weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if I can pull out a third one. Do you have a third one?
Yeah, I have a couple more. Scandal, all the scenes with the model who just had a baby are really this wonderful evidence being just a really good guy. I kind of talked about it already. This movie, it will come up in the summer at some point. But Sword of Doom, the Nakadai samurai film that I think is the best samurai film ever made. And it's Toshiro shows up in one scene, and this one scene is kind of one of the highlights of the movie. Basically, Sword of Doom is this Nakadai plays this corrupt samurai who progressively becomes a worse and worse person. And his sins ultimately come back to bite him in the ass by the end of the movie. And so you see him just kind of slowly getting worse and more violent and more unstable. And Toshiro shows up in a scene where he's at a dojo teaching some young students, and Nakadai shows up and he's like, "Oh, I want to challenge the master here," and so Toshiro agrees, and once they right before they start the fight, Nakadai's style is very unorthodox, where he kind of like limply holds the sword so it's pointing down. So it's like not pointing down, but like pointing at an angle towards the ground. And so immediately Toshiro's like, this is strange. And they duel, and that style is like this crazy style from this one region. And then you kind of pick up that Toshiro's character is like, oh, I've heard of this guy, he's bad news. And they do like a practice duel. And yeah, so it's this really great, very, very brief scene. Like, a lot of places will say, oh, co-starring Toshirô Mifune, but he's in like maybe 5 minutes at the most.
Yeah, I saw that as a Toshirô
Yeah, it
Mifune
is not. That's a big fat lie. And the duel from Sanjuro at the very end against Nakadai. Oh, another Nakadai duel. I just
Wait, I
realized that
thought he fought him in Yojimbo. What?
he did fight him in Yojimbo too. He's the guy, the Nakadai was the guy with the pistol in Yojimbo.
Yep.
And I just love the very simple duel at the end of Sanjuro. That, like, tonally, it turns into something totally different, and then it immediately switches back once the duel is over to, like, the kind of light, goofy tone of the rest of the movie. Where you get, like, a. Well, all the scenes of violence in Sanjuro are very, I'm gonna say unpleasant, but like it's not reveling in the violence like Yojimbo was, where like the.
Yeah, I mean, Yojimbo is definitely inspired by spaghetti Western violence. Like you said, they revel in it. They emphasize like how terrible things are there. And Sanjuro almost feels more like a comedy that happens to have some very violent parts in it.
Yeah, and like the violent parts, like the characters. Well, Sanjuro clearly does not want to fight, and every time he has to fight, he very begrudgingly is like, fine,
All right, I'll
I'll
kill these
fight.
20 people. Jeez.
Yeah, but like, you can just tell that he's just so tired of it, and
Yeah.
yet, just the life he lives, it kind of. That this is how he. Like it'll just keep on happening to him because there's just something about that character, and it's that fight scene with Nakadai where they just like stare at each other for like what feels like forever, and then Toshiro slashes him in the chest and you get this big blood explosion.
Oh yeah, I totally forgot about that. Yeah, that's rather shocking. Because even
Yeah.
Yojimbo doesn't have a huge thing like that. It's a
There is, I think towards the middle of the scene of the movie, there's a fight scene where he slashes a guy on the chest against the wall, and you see a blood explosion.
I see.
And this kind of comes down, it's like a nobody, and it's just a kind of a really strange choice of like, oh, it's not even the main villain, it's just some random bad guy. Who gets a big old blood explosion?
He was full of blood.
Yeah. And yeah, so I have my two favorite intros of Toshiro in a film. Hidden Fortress, where he just kind of is falling around the two peasants, and then they just like turn around and see him just staring, and then they're at the campfire. And they want to insult him, but then he just looks at them and they immediately cower and try to play it off like, oh, it's fine. And his introduction in Sanjuro, where the guy, where all those idiot samurai are just talking about like meeting with the governor or whatever, And then Sandros opens up the closet where he was sleeping. He's like, "Oh, you guys are gonna get killed. Don't do that." I love just how casual that beginning is.
Yeah. So, do you want to talk about the two that we watched here? Go through them real quick.
Yeah.
So the one that we actually both watched is Samurai One, Musashi Miyamoto, which is part one in a trilogy of movies directed by Hiroshi Inagaki.
Yeah, director of Rickshaw Man.
Mm-hmm, all about the epic story of Musashi Miyamoto.
Yes,
who was is apparently a well-known historical figure, right?
Yeah, he's a real person.
Yeah. I don't really know anything about him, but I already knew about Musashi because of video game references, honestly. But I like this movie, but it feels so much like it's like, oh no, this is definitely part one. You know?
Yeah, I wrote in my notes, it's like a superhero origin story.
Exactly. It'd be like if the first Spider-Man movie was only Spider-Man getting bit by a radioactive spider and then Uncle Ben dying, and then that's it. You know,
yeah,
next thing we see, Spider-Man's like, I've got the costume, I'm ready to go.
Yeah, like it's like I was thinking in context of the era, and like Musashi is kind of like almost the equivalent of like a superhero in terms of just his historical significance and Japan. So like I wrote my notes, it's like the trilogy is like the Japanese Dark Knight trilogy but of the 50s. Where it's just,
I think that this is a more noble character than Batman.
Yeah, but like in the context of like cultural characters.
You know, it's interesting, since I haven't seen the other two movies, I don't know if this is a character feature of Musashi. Like, he was chaste and he didn't drink alcohol. I didn't know if that was, like I said, one of the historical aspects to his legend, or if it was just a character choice in the movie.
Well, the problem with what we know about him is a lot of the information is kind of from our stand secondhand sources. Like,
of course,
some stuff is from him directly and some stuff is secondhand sources. And so it's kind of a bit muddled as to like certain parts of his life. And he apparently allegedly fought and survived 61 duels. But the problem with, but what I, the thing that I question about that is, I remember when I used to listen to the History of Japan podcast, the way battles are recorded in Japanese history is a duel between the two generals. They don't describe the battle scene. They describe duels between the important figures on both sides.
Yeah.
So like any, so like we don't know much about actual battles in throughout Japanese history. So, any history of Musashi like in combat, I find kind of fishy for that reason.
I think he's more important as a story figure than as the actual historical figure. Anyways,
yeah, it's just like, I feel like in the context of like how Japanese military history was written for a long time kind of needs to be brought up that it's not really. Yeah, he was real, just kind of like Boudicca in Wales, where it's like some of the information about her I don't think is necessarily true.
Yeah. This movie is like, it has a lot in common with Senshiro Sugata. It's, you know, a person who's like, I want to be the best at this thing, and so I'm going to... I mean, his idea of becoming the best at this thing is not to study with the master or anything at first. You know, he's playing the character... What is his name before they rename him?
Takuzo?
Takuzo. Yeah, something like that. And he and his goofy friend, Marahachi, maybe that's where I got that other one from. They just go off to war like, oh, we're going to become generals. We're going to become samurai. We're going to get the head of the general and take it there, and we'll join a royal house. And Manahachi's got a girl at home that is, you know, hopelessly devoted to him, Otusu.
Yep.
And it's, you know, nothing works out. Like, their army, side of the army, ends up getting defeated, and they both run off trying to survive, end up at some lady's house. Yeah. Who...
Do you know how old Musashi would have been at the time?
No.
He would have been 16.
Okay, I figured it was something super young like that.
Yeah, and casting a man in his mid-30s is...
Yeah.
he had been trained in combat to an extent by that point. Like, he apparently killed a man when he was 13 in a duel or something.
Mm.
So...
Well, how many people would you say he kills in this movie?
Not many.
Really?
I'll be honest, I kind of forgot a lot of it since I've seen it this morning. I didn't take notes.
The first time we see him actually attacking people, he might have killed people during the war, I don't know. But the first time we actually see him killing people is when those bandits come to those ladies' houses. I think he kills like 7 bandits. And then, after he's on the run, you know, the Marahachi has run off with the two ladies, and he's leaving his fiancée behind. Musashi decides to go back to their home village. But when he gets back there, they treat him as somebody who's abandoned his post because he breaks through a check station or whatever you want to call it. He kills a couple of people there.
Oh, yeah.
And then as he's getting through the village and his people are hunting him, he just keeps on chopping people. If I had to guess, I'd say he does at least 30 people in this movie.
I thought he had a wooden sword.
That's what it was, except for, like, he even kills the leader of the bandits. So it isn't, he must start with a wooden sword and then pick up a regular sword at some point during that first fight. Because he is, people are like they've been stabbed.
To me it looked like that wooden sword the whole time.
Yeah, well, maybe they were overacting. But they were certainly acting like they were being slashed and stabbed.
Yeah.
But that's those two ladies, that's the, you know, sign that he's this virtuous person, even though he's not afraid to use his sword and he's a little headstrong and overconfident. You know, the lady of the house offers him alcohol and he's like, no, I can't. He doesn't give an explanation. He just can't. Both the daughter of this lady and the lady of the house throw themselves at him and he's like, oh, women.
Yeah.
And at the end, when he's gone through a forced transformation after being locked in an attic with only a bunch of books, he Otusu, I think, is in love with him, and he admits that he's in love with her, but he is committed to his journey of improving himself, so he ditches her behind, you know, once again maintaining his chaste nature.
Yeah. Apparently the real Musashi rarely bathed because he was paranoid of getting attacked.
Well, after the first time.
Yeah, which happens in the movie. He takes a bath and then he gets attacked.
Yep, he gets betrayed. And that's too bad because he was really enjoying that bath.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like a lot of the dialogue in this movie, and I like Toshiro, but it, like I said, it just feels like the beginning, and they probably could have combined the first two movies, although I'll have to see.
Yeah, I will eventually watch the rest of the trilogy.
Yeah, I'm definitely watching the
second. I like Inagaki. Is it Inagaki?
Yes.
Yeah, so far his track record is pretty good. I like it more. I like it more. Rickshaw. Well, It's better than Retro Man, I think.
Yeah, but you can tell he's a good director.
Yeah. Yeah, nope. Like, huh?
Not sure if I like it more than Rickshaw.
No. Well, Retro Man, he doesn't mix tones very well on that one, where it goes from happy to, like, depressing. It's like, this, it doesn't mix, he doesn't combine it well.
Yeah, the plane goes down pretty fast at the end of that one, but I do think it has an overall better tone, and it feels like a complete story.
Well, yeah. But there's a fight scene in Samurai 1 where he, it's towards the end where it's before he gets captured in the room, where like he's in a field and you see him hit a guy with the handle of a spear,
right?
But it totally looked real. Like you see a guy, you see the spear, like the wood part make contact, and you see a guy fly back.
Yeah, actually strike the guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't. And I'm pretty sure that was a real hit.
Probably.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I guess I wasn't. I was watching this. I have to admit, I was watching it on my phone during my lunch break. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I might have missed it.
Oh yeah. Towards the end, there's a moment where it's like, oh, I think Toshio really hit that guy with the spear.
Oh, there's a couple parts in the next movie, the other movie that we watched, that I didn't get to watch the whole thing of, where people are very close to explosions.
Yeah, that was a little unnerving.
Is there anything else you want to say about Musashi Miyamoto?
No, it's kind of standard Toshio character from the 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing else besides it's worth watching. It's 90 minutes.
Yeah, it's definitely worth watching. Yeah, and I'm definitely gonna watch the next two.
Yeah,
but Red Sun was what you were really excited about.
Yeah, because it's Charles Bronson and Toshiro in a movie together.
Yeah, and Alain Delon, which he's a French actor. He was in Purple Noon. He was in Le Cercle Rouge. Like. I was like, what is he going to be doing in this movie? He plays the guy in the main bad guy, the one in the black.
I kind of figured stuff. They, yeah. Since the Frenchman would be the evil one.
Yeah, of course. And but, he's pretty evil.
Yeah, and Ursula Andress from the original Bond girl.
Yeah.
And from
the one who was dubbed over completely in Goldfinger.
She was on.
Or Dr. No, sorry.
Like, all the Bond girls were dubbed over until Roger Moore era.
Shut up.
Really? It's very noticeable when you watch the Blu-rays.
What's her name isn't dubbed over in Goldfinger?
Who?
Pussy Galore.
I don't know.
Oh, I'll take your word for it.
A lot of them are dubbed over.
So this movie seemed really good.
Yeah,
I was only 40 minutes into it, and I'm like dying to watch the rest of it.
I'm not much of a Western fan, but I really do like this one because it's surprisingly deep. It gets into like how the West was about how America, the Westerns are about how America was changing culturally, and it ties into Japan changing, and like there's a part towards the end where Toshio's character is saying, like, we opened up our borders and now samurai won't use swords anymore. We'll use guns. We'll, like, samurai won't be important anymore. So it's just, like, this kind of interesting juxtaposition of the shift in Japanese culture and the shift in American culture.
Yeah, that's a funny thing to say. I mean, gunpowder was invented in Japan, I believe, wasn't it?
No, it's China.
Okay. Well, either way, it would have shown up in Japan before it would have been used
yeah.
mostly anywhere else. And we've definitely seen samurai movies where guns, you know, like musket-style guns have been used. So it's not that crazy, Toshiro. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but, like, samurai were basically, like, the upper class.
Right, exactly.
And it was basically they had money to train and to have armor, where if you didn't have money, you were just a farmer or merchant.
Yeah. I got such a thrill out of hearing Toshiro speak English in this movie.
Yeah, like, I was scared it was going to be dubbed at first, and then I was like, oh, good. Yeah. It isn't.
No, it's him. He's speaking broken, but not too broken English. Like, he's like chewing on those words as best as he can.
Yeah.
And he's acting, like, he's acting. He's not just saying the words, you know, that somebody has coached to him. So,
yeah.
It's really enjoyable, especially him bouncing off of Charles Bronson, who's trying, like you said.
Yeah. Like, when Bronson actually cares in the movie, it usually is really great. Like, it will elevate the movie.
Yeah, I've not seen The Magnificent Seven, but in this, he's like the comedy relief, as far as I can tell.
And he's kind of a real piece of shit.
Oh, he's definitely, yeah. I mean, he was in on the, like, the whole thing starts because the Japanese ambassador and his guards are on this train, and this train happens to also have a mail car that has a safe on it, which, of course, gets targeted by some bandits, including Charles Bronson. So when the train gets held up and there's a bunch of Union soldiers that are on there that get taken out and stuff like that. They want to open up the safe. They've got a guy lighting dynamite. That's where the explosions come in, where people are very close to them.
You remind me of the Russ Meyer film Super Vixens, where the big climax of the movie is Charles Napier, who he managed to be in, like, sleazy, low-budget stuff and in legit stuff. Like, he was on Batman, the animated series, doing voices, among other things.
But, oh, yeah, I know Charles Napier.
Yeah. Russ loved him. But in Super Vixens, he launches dynamite, six sticks of dynamite at the hero of the movie at the end, because he's jealous of his new wife. And it's like this. It's like the dynamite gets a little too close to the people.
Anyways, Charles Bronson gets betrayed.
Yeah.
And that's why they all, him and Toshiro, end up teaming up to go track down this guy.
Yeah. It's like The Revenant.
I've not seen The Revenant.
Oh.
Doesn't he team up with a bear in that one?
No.
Oh.
A bear attacks him. It's a CGI bear, and it's pretty good.
Oh, so the bear's the enemy.
This is better than Revenant. Revenant is like 45 minutes too long.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I feel
like this is another tight hour. Oh, actually, it's almost 2 hours.
Yeah. The middle feel like it dragged a little bit for me, but it kind of picked up. Like, there are points where I was like, this feel like it's dragging, but then you got to see this, Bronson actually caring, and it's like, oh no, this is actually, I don't mind these scenes of this them hanging out, because it's this Bronson actually trying, and it's just so magnetic to watch.
Yeah, if you ever want to see Bronson get judo'd, Toshiro throws him over his shoulder about 7 or 8 times. Like I said, he's got the comedic role. He keeps getting this problem. There's a part where they slide down like a cliffside that's at an angle, and Bronson's just rolling and rolling. And, like, I don't know if it's actually Toshiro or a stuntman, but he's like just hopping down the cliff, you know, like step by step, stuff like that. There's definitely some Kurosawa movie where, in in the Hidden Fortress. Those two goofballs are trying to climb that cliffside that keeps crumbling underneath them. And I was thinking, like, oh, he's got practice. He knows what to do.
I don't want to say too much about it, because it is definitely worth watching.
Yeah. I'll finish it. Okay. And then I'll tell everybody all the secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Terrence Young directed Dr. No and From Russia with Love.
And Thunderball, which I think is underrated.
Wait Until Dark. This guy's amazing.
Oh, I forgot he did the Wait Until Dark.
And the Valachi paper. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, and I have nothing else to say.
That's cool. So that's Toshiro Mifune, obviously.
Yeah.
You can't do a Kurosawa podcast without talking about how great he is.
Yeah, in a couple months there'll be a Nakadai one. Mm-hmm. With maybe a guest. I am still kind of working on that.
Sure.
And next month will probably be the... It'll either be one on this movie called A Taxing Woman, about a woman who's a tax collector in 1980s Japan, who kind of takes on the Yakuza. And it's really good. And it's either be that, or it will be a special episode on Setsuko Hara, because her birthday is next month.
Mm-hmm.
June 17th. Well,
we have to do one on my father, too, right?
But some point.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. Yeah. I was thinking of doing, like, combining some lesser-known actors, because there just isn't much information out there about him.
My father's not a lesser-known actor.
Yeah, but there aren't, like, biographies or books written about him.
Well, I'm going to change that.
Yeah.
I'll write a book about him, and then you'll see.
Yeah.
I'll be laughing all the way to the bank.
Okay. Yeah, so, you got a podcast or something?
Sure, if you want to hear me wax on about movies just as cool as these, as Yojimbo, as The Hidden Fortress, as Red Sun, you can listen to me and my pals Sarah and Aaron talk about science fiction and fantasy movies on Please Don't Send Me Into Outer Space. Every week, we talk about a different one. Most recently, we did Silent Green very recently. What was that one you liked? What's it called? The Death Laden Egg?
Yep.
Some sort of egg movie?
Yeah, it's a Jala movie about the importance of chickens in modern society.
Yeah. Yeah, so just as good as Rashomon.
Yeah.
And if you're into the 90s, we did The Midas Touch. That's a pretty cool movie about a kid who gets the Midas Touch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, lots of fun stuff. And if you like, we have 131 episodes. If there's a movie that you can think of that would be a lot of fun to talk about, we might have already talked about it. Just check out our full catalog. It's on iTunes, it's on Stitcher, it's all the usual places.
Earlier today I recorded 3 episodes of Prince Track by Track. I'm not sure when they will be coming out, but
knowing Darren, never.
Yeah, it'll happen at some point.
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding.
Let's see. I'm a little tired, but for my blog, Jailhouse 701, Japanese Cult Cinema, I am going through the Sukeban Dika series, which was a manga turned to some live action movies where this girl's in like an undercover cop and she uses a steel yo-yo to take down people that the cops send her missions on her to.
I'm glad you said yo-yo.
Yeah. And like the other girls in her squad use yo-yos and one uses marbles. It's fun and interesting and kind of, the first one at least is weirdly political with 70s politics in Japan. that you can get. I'll get to in my review. So by the time this comes out, I'll probably be up. And what else? I think that's it.
Sounds good.
Oh wait, someone knife fight. I did just a review of a movie called No Place to Hide, where it's a mentally unstable woman is under attack from various people in it, and the lead actress looks like Shelley Duvall, and she was also in Sword and the Sorcerer
Oh
as
man, I love that movie.
she was one of the leads. I think the princess or something.
We did an episode of Please Don't Send Me Into Outer Space about Sword and the Sorcerer, and it's one of the most fun episodes because that movie is really crazy.
No Place to Hide came out, I think, the same year as Sword and Sorcerer.
Does it have any wizards in it?
No, it has
Boring.
Shelley Duvall look alike, so there's that. Kathleen Beller.
All right.
That's it. So the next Nora episode will probably be, I'm not even sure when it's coming out, so I won't say. Thug Life, Not Gonna Die Forever. You know, that stuff.
Toshiro forever.
Yeah, there she are forever.
Bye.
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. The show's Twitter is @highandlowpod. The show can be found on Facebook under the title of High and Low, a Kurosawa podcast. The show is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Podbean. We are no longer on Podient. Thank you for listening.